Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bertram, and we're hooking up with Tony the Tornado. You know, right now. Tornado. Hey, how's it going? We're live. Introduce yourself.
Hey, all right. Awesome. I was like, I didn't know, we were calling or whatever, because I just got a brand new phone, and I really don't know how to use it yet.
All right.
I'm like, hopefully my phone option works. Because since I got it, I've only had, like, one phone call. So I'm like, maybe I'm missing a lot of important calls.
Nope, not this one. I'm late. And
yeah.
So.
That's okay. You are forgiven.
Tonight we have a guest coming on around 9:15 Eastern there. We have John Bones Shattuck. Not John Bones Jones, like everybody would probably want. But hey, what can you do? No. John Bones Jones is actually fighting this weekend, so that would be pretty hard. But anyway, we have John Bones Shattuck, who runs Shattuck MMA, and he has actually a very good friend and associate there, Kamal Shalroos, that we've had on in the past, and he's going to be on the fight card this weekend. So,
is that the UFC card that's going to be on?
Yes.
Yeah, probably the one. I'm going to Florida on Saturday, and probably the one bar that I'm going to that I go to every year when I'm down there. To a sports bar. I go there for dinner, and then I usually stay for a few drinks. And last year, they had the UFC card on. There was just a couple guys in there that were, like, just spouting off like idiots, and I couldn't tolerate them too much more, so I ended up leaving. I was getting half a buzz on. And these guys were, like, talking, like, they were, like, you know, you would have thought you were sitting next to, like, Brock Lesnar and Ken Shamrock and, Royce Gracie and all those guys, instead of a couple guys that, like, have these fresh baby faces that they've never been hit in their lives. That was the one picture, if you go on my Facebook page, there was a guy, like, sitting in front of me, and he was talking all this shit. And you would have thought this guy had been in about 60 fights. And he had on the shirt, was like, ground and pound, sprawl and brawl, I do it all, I am it all, I am the new breed. I was like, no, you're not. You don't give a shit. He's some fat white kid that, you know, probably never left his mom's basement.
Right.
You know, and you know how controversial I can be.
Well, there has been some pretty big news in MMA this last week. We had a huge development with Strikeforce got purchased by the UFC for $40 million.
Yeah, didn't you like my comment about that?
Yeah.
You said they were trying to get a monopoly, and I said, no, not until they get Boardwalk and Park Place.
Right. Yeah, it's going to take a while. Actually, it's kind of interesting you said that, because it is going to take them a while to actually capitalize on that purchase, because the buzzword that Dana White, or the buzz phrase that Dana White kept using the other day when he had his interview with Gary Lalwani to announce this, was business as usual, he kept saying. He said it 10 times in one interview. And he keeps saying it. So it leads me to believe that the purchase wasn't really a traditional purchase, obviously, because he kept a lot of the people in place that are involved with Strikeforce, and there's no possible way, I guess, because of the contracts, and from what they're saying, that there's just not, it's not going to be a situation where they can roll it all into one, because, for one, Showtime has a contract with Strikeforce until 2014, so it's not like they could just go and start doing pay-per-views with Strikeforce and doing their own thing in a lot of ways with the actual contract. The other interesting thing is Dana is saying he's not even going to actually appear at Strikeforce events. at all, which is kind of funny. But I guess because there's some situations over there where he's been outright critical of Showtime and some of the personnel and some of the people that are involved. So he doesn't even want to be even associated personally with it. And even though they're going to do some cross promotion and they're going to be pumping a whole lot of money into it, it's definitely going to be a weird situation for a while because it's going to be owned by the UFC, but it's not going to seem like the UFC owns it. So I don't know as far as crossover how much we're going to see how soon. But one of my immediate thoughts right away when I heard about it was, well, now Randy Couture is going to be able to fight Fedor Emelianenko, which is back when I first started in this business, really even started paying attention to MMA, that was one of the big fights that they were tossing around trying to make. And the only problem was that they couldn't work out Fedor's contract because Dana White didn't want to do any co-promotion. And he didn't want to let any of his fighters be able to compete in any of their leagues of anything. Not even the sambo fights that Fedor likes to compete in. So that's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. I heard a huge conference call the other day, like half an hour long conference call. I listened to the whole thing about how they were going to work it. And actually, Lorenzo Fertitta was on that one. So it wasn't just Dana White, but it seems like they both are a little bit confused at this point. They don't know what to do with it. It's like they got a new toy, and it's got so many bells and whistles, they haven't figured them all out yet. So I don't know. I don't know how they're going to work it out and figure it out, but like Dana said, it's going to be business as usual for a while, and we're just going to leave it to this Scott Coker, who's the CEO, who's staying on. But since the development, some other things have come up, like the price tag was supposedly $40 million. That was broken. And then the other thing that was kind of interesting was that it was revealed that there were some other players in the game trying to get a hold of Strikeforce that didn't get it. One of them was Proly, which used to have a really nice website. It was like a social site interface. And it was back when they were associated with Elite XD, which was the predecessor of Strikeforce, really. And what happened was they continued on and they made Pro Elite into a public company. And since this failed bid was revealed that Pro Elite tried to make for Strikeforce, their shares went from 19 cents a share to 9 cents a share. So I don't think that company is doing very well. And right now their website is pretty much a shell. So it's not even clear to me what the heck they do. But UFC bought Strikeforce. It's a pretty big deal. But as far as crossover, like I said, I think the only big fight that's probably going to get made anytime soon, because Randy's contract is pretty much at an end and he's already talking about retirement, would be for him to finish out with the UFC, then cross over to Strikeforce and fight Fedor as a final fight. And it could be Fedor's final fight too, because his last couple fights haven't gone very well for him.
Yeah.
Smacked around pretty good.
Well, once that happens, sometimes like players and fighters will take like, subtle hints, maybe it's time to hang them up, maybe, time to look in a different direction. Sometimes you get not so subtle hints.
Right.
Taking a few beatings ain't too subtle.
And, of course, boxing last weekend, there was a few big fights that I actually watched for once. I did watch one, believe it or not.
Which fight did you get to see?
I watched Miguel Cotto versus Ricardo Mayorga. And I couldn't help but think when they flashed to the guy in the audience that everybody loves to hate, Antonio Margarito, that Mayorga would have a good fight against Margarito. And if they could make it, that would be
Borger fight. I did, for the first few rounds, from what I read, it was, pretty much back and forth. Mayorga being, as usual, very aggressive, very, face-forward self. As the fight went along, got more and more towards, Cotto, better boxing ability, a little faster hands. And then Cotto finally put him down with a left hook in the 12th. And then, Mayorga, did a no-mas. But he said it wasn't because of that. He said it was because he hurt his thumb. Wow, which was pretty impressive that if Cotto hits you so hard on the chin that you hurt your thumb. Then after the fight, Mayorga immediately announced his retirement, and then 2 days later rescinded it. Yeah, he announced his retirement, from what I heard. Then he came out and, gave a three-fight plan. And I forget what his plan was. I just remember reading it thinking, didn't he just retire? Like, damn, that's like, a quick-ass retirement. In fact, I won't even get to see the replay this weekend. I'm going to have to DVR it because I'll be down in Florida. I did get to see some of the HBO card on the next day. Andy Lee, what a fight that was. He was losing. You didn't hear about that one, did you, Richard? You didn't even see any of that one.
The Zinzurich one?
No, not Martinez Zinzurich. Andy Lee and...
I did hear about that one. I didn't see it, but I did hear about that it was like a Fight of the Year candidate.
Oh, it was pretty good. Andy Lee was losing. He was taking some shots. And, I was like, damn. And I remember talking to our guest last week, and I remember I backed Lee. I picked him in that fight, and he was taking some shots, and then he finally came back, landed a massive left hand, and it was all downhill from there, and very impressive stoppage. And what impressed me the most about it was, the resiliency when he was down. And I don't mean literally knocked down. I mean literally down on the cards and taking some good shots. That he was able to, show some mettle through adversity and win that fight very impressively. The main event, Sergio Martinez and Sergey Zinzurich. Martinez looked good as ever, very methodical, excellent skills. The guy gets better every fight. That Ring Magazine and some other promotions, publications, I should say, that I follow are now bumping Martinez ahead of Mayweather because they said Mayweather, he's practically done. They said, he's doing more with his mouth than his gloves. And, lip service ain't going to get you pound-for-pound rankings anymore. A lot of places actually, some places have actually considered putting Mayweather down to fourth behind Pacquiao, Martinez, and Benito Zanair.
Interesting. Well, I did watch the Mayorga fight, and... I think he did see his stock rise a little bit, as they mentioned in the actual fight, during the fight. He did do pretty well during the early part, and then just kind of collapsed in the later rounds. But there's too much showboat in number one, was his main flaw. And number two, he forgot about his jab. And right when I started thinking that when I was watching it, the announcers picked up on it, like... immediately, almost, after I was saying it to myself. The announcers throw up the stats, and there it is. He's thrown, like a fraction of the amount of jabs that Cotto was throwing.
Yeah, well, from watching my work in the past, he's not much of a jabber. He never has been. The guy's gotten more skills than he displays, but his way of fighting, it's Kruger style. He's the guy who likes to get under your skin. He likes to turn every fight into, kind of a macho test. And that's how he beat a guy like Vernon Forrest, especially the first time. Nobody knew who Mayorga was. He comes out there and, he dared Forrest to hit him a few times, got in Forrest's head, and stand in front of him, and then he was able to land that big shot to take Forrest out. And then in the rematch, you know, he was once again able to get in Forrest's head a little bit and keep him out of his game plan. That's when Moriorga is at his best, when he uses his psychology more than anything. You know, the guy doesn't, like, you look at it, he has above average power. He's a good puncher. But you look at everything else. His boxing skills are mediocre. His jab is mediocre. His hand speed is mediocre. His best asset is, you know, his ability to get you out of your game plan and to fight in a, as Dr. Cox would call it, a pissing contest. That's Dr. Coxism right there. Damn it, Pinnacle, don't get in a pissing contest with him. Box, box, box.
One point was really funny because Mayorga ran over into the corner and he was like pointing at the ground with his gloves. Get over here. I want you to fight me right here. And Cotto was just kind of looking at him like, yeah, right. I'm not going to go over there. And then he went over and kind of threw a few punches. But Cotto's big weakness that Mayorga never capitalized on, really, well, not enough at least, was he kept the one hand low. And not in a way like Roy Jones Jr. would do it to bait the guy in and slip and move, but just as a weakness of style, just kept the, I think it was the left hand low. And Mayorga was hitting him with the right hands because of it. And then he just kind of let it go. He just stopped doing it, and he just let his antics get the better of him in the fight. So that was kind of unfortunate. And then there was the other fight that I got to catch part of, the Martinez fight. It was pretty good. But I don't know. I mean, all these calls for the changing of the guard for the pound-for-pound best, I think, are a little premature. I mean, Martinez is good, but I don't know how much that fight really proves. I mean, it's like that guy's first fight over here in the U.S. It's not like he's beaten a whole ton of world beaters. You know, the knockout, it took him three times knocking him down that one round to get the knockout, the TKO. And I don't know. I mean, the guy's obviously very good, but pound for pound best, I mean, give him a few more bigger opponents before he starts talking that ragtime.
Well, look at it this way. Look at it this way, Rich. Okay, Martinez's first fight that really, I mean, he has two losses on his record. He lost a stoppage loss back a couple years ago to Antonio Margarito. So already right now, there's an asterisk next to that. He had a fight with Kermit Cintron, who was highly ranked. Wasn't a title fight because Cintron had already lost his title the year before. But he had a fight with Kermit Cintron, who only had two losses coming into that fight, both against Margarito. So this asterisk next to both of them. He basically kicked the shit out of Cintron. Should have had a stoppage win, but the referee blew the count in one round and it ended up being a draw. That fight was one that Martinez should have won. He had the first fight with Paul Williams. I thought Martinez won that fight, but he didn't get the decision and went to Williams by a split decision. Turnaround, beat Kelly Pavlik impressively. And then knocked the living shit out of Paul Williams in the rematch. Knocked him out cold with one shot. Now, yeah, granted, we don't know much about Drzyznik, his last opponent. But the fact of the matter is, he looked good. I mean, he beat the guy up. He bounced him off the canvas like a basketball. You know, and he took a fighter that was, we don't know much about him. But the guy had a good record, and Martinez just blew right through him. Now, yeah, okay, I understand there could be, a lull or a little bit of, skepticism about, the changing of the guard. Well, you can say, well, you know, I mean, who says, he should be ahead of Floyd Mayweather, whatever. What has Mayweather done in the last 2 years, okay? Granted, both guys that he beat were in the pound-for-pound, rankings, but he's only had two fights practically in almost 3 or 4 years. That being a guy like Juan Manuel Marquez, who was moving up two weight classes, And Mayweather didn't have the courtesy to come in on weight, came in 3 pounds heavy. And then he beat Shane Mosley, who, I mean, Mosley looked great in his fight against Margarito in January of 2009, didn't fight for another 15 months, and looked like shit against Mayweather, and then looked like shit against Sergio Mora a few months ago.
Well, if you put it that way, I don't know. I still don't know. I mean, I just would, I'd love to see him fight a few more tougher opponents before they really start moving him up those pound-for-pound rankings.
Hey, Rick, you know what you should buy me?
What?
You should buy me a customized Pennsylvania license plate.
Okay.
It says BXRNMN.
Boxing. What?
Boxing ring, man.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Only if it has Fight News Unlimited on it somewhere.
Well, I mean, yeah, I just need to put that in small print. I don't know if they allow that on license plates, though.
Yeah.
Because I'm the boxing ring, man.
Yes, you are. Well, speaking of boxing ring and statistics, did you know that one of our boys lost his first fight this weekend?
Who
was that? You don't know? Mark Tucker.
Hey, really? No, I didn't know that.
Lost to a guy who was 7-8, I believe, prior. Down there in his neck of the woods, too. But he's got some legitimate excuses. He's got a little bit of ring rust. He's been off for a while with some injuries. And the other guy was fighting very near his hometown as well. And just had a lot to prove. Mark Tucker, D&D Tucker, had a tough loss. I just bring up.
How was it? Decision? Stoppage?
It was a decision. Definitely a decision. Let me just bring it up here online before I talk too much out of turn. Mark D&D Tucker. Yeah, it was Larry Pryor who was 6-8, and it was a unanimous decision, 8-rounder, and it was in Fairfax, Virginia, and he lost by scores of 73-79 twice and 74-78 once, and I think I read a quote of his from that fight where he said he just didn't feel like himself the whole night. And his last fight was in February of 2011. So, wow, that was not much of a layoff, like I said.
Yeah, well, that's a month?
Before that, he hadn't fought since June of 2010. So that was the big layoff, I guess. But, this was his second fight coming back from the layoff and the injuries. So he's got one loss now. Hopefully he learns from it and moves on. Other than that, we got some interesting boxing news. I don't know if you heard this, but do you know who Thomas Adamek's next opponent is set to be?
Well, he's fighting soon again in Jersey, isn't he? He's fighting Ted McBride, the Clone's Colossus, the guy that beat Mike Tyson.
Right, yeah. It was last time I saw him, did not look like the guy who beat Mike Tyson. I actually was up in the gym with him a couple times at Goody Petronelli's gym in Brockton. And saw him sparring, saw his little kid running around. And he's pretty big, you know. He's got the big belly going. He likes to go to the Irish bakery every day. From what I heard. in bride's favor. But I'd be surprised.
Here's some heavyweight news that I've heard recently. Vladimir Klitschko pulled out of his fight with Derek Chisora. He is now going to be fighting David Haye. I believe that's in July. They finally got that contract signed, which kind of sucks for Derek Chisora. You know, you're getting ready, you know, for a fight, which you think is going to be for the heavyweight championship of the world. Against the number one ranked heavyweight in the world. This is your shot. Klitschko pulls out with a back injury a few months ago. It gets rescheduled, and they're like, nah, we're taking a bigger fight with David Haye. Well, that sucks. So then we got Vitaly Klitschko. He's fighting, I believe it's this weekend, isn't it? Against Orlando Solis, the Cuban Olympian, who is a lot shorter, stocky guy at like 260. Looks kind of blubbery, but he can still fight his ass off.
Yep, I did read about that. Also saw David Haye getting into his limo to go to training camp for the other Klitschko. It's going to be an interesting fight. And I kind of was wondering over the last week, what the heck ever happened to the big dude, Valuev? And I looked him up, and he's actually Frankenstein's monster is getting rebuilt. He's had like 3 or 4 surgeries, I guess, in this past year. And he'll probably be looking to make a comeback within the next couple months, according to what I read.
Yeah, he had that loss to David Haye, and then, like I said, I hadn't heard about really anything since. I was like, oh, you know, maybe he's calling it a career. I didn't know. But, yeah, that makes some sense. If you're that size, and, you know, if you're trying to do anything athletic, your body's going to break down.
So we might see him again later on. We'll find out. Other than that, we got the big UFC card this weekend. But first, let's check out BoxRec. See what other fights we got coming up. See if you can win the $1,000 Walmart gift card.
Nice. We can always use a $1,000 Walmart gift card.
All right, what do we got? Oh, and the Friday night fights next week is going to be in Vegas. And if I am still here, chances are I will be at Friday night fights. I've already put the word out to the promoters there. The facility guys there to get some press passes.
Nice. By the way, Rich, why did you get your membership declined to the Boxing Writers?
Oh, man. Thank you for mentioning that. That goes to show you why I don't try to join associations. It's like a country club. It's basically, you're trying to say that I'm not journalistic enough when it's obviously do not know the definition of journalism. I mean, journalism is not necessarily, I mean, to call somebody a journalist, it's not necessarily a compliment. So actually, it's a very good writer that runs the whole thing named Thomas Hauser. He's written some books on that.
I've read Thomas Hauser.
Yeah.
I've read several of his books.
Written some books on Muhammad Ali and boxing in general, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate that, you know, there's a lot of great writers out there in this organization, but when you go and say that, you know, somebody's writing isn't journalistic enough, it kind of cracks me up, because, I mean, I get that all the time as a lawyer. They try to make it look like I'm not a journalist. They just did it in my last hearing. And, you know, once I outlined all my experience to the judge even said, yeah, you're a journalist. So I think they're just blowing smoke when they talk about stuff like that. And, you know, they didn't even really have an answer. This Hauser guy, who's a great writer, like I said, when I showed him the definition and everything of what a journalist is, you know, what journalism consists of, even he didn't really have an answer for that, but basically, because I don't have, you know, a book out there or too much in the way of beyond like interviews. Although, I mean, I do have a ton of boxing writing out there, but I think they probably looked at the overall picture, you know, that I've done so much MMA stuff. And I might have even pissed them off a little bit because one of the articles that I asked them to review was about Butterbean and only like 10% of it was boxing related and the rest was MMA. I probably should have included the Ice Jones Scully articles that I did.
Yeah, they were really good. That was what John originally sent me when I saw your name. I said, oh, shit, I know that guy.
Yeah.
You know what? Now, to apply, what do you got to do?
Well, you have to show them that you have a body of work in writing about boxing.
So what do you do? Like, send them some of your articles, or?
Right. And
shit, I can do that.
They send you all these questions. They ask you, you know, like, have you ever done work for a promoter that you were paid for? You know, how many articles do you have in print or online? All this stuff. And,
I don't know. I mean, I'm doing this for 3 years now. I don't know how many articles I've written. I'd have to go through, like, the archives on the page and count them all up. Well, here's what I got, and I think I'm going to do this, Rich, just to see what they say to me. Here's what I can include, and tell me if you think this is a good idea or not. I can include one or two of my articles of fights that I've covered. Now, there's no less than 20 articles on that site of fights that I've been to live and have covered, from fights down at the New Alhambra, from fights at the Blue Horizon, from fights at the Pottstown High School that Harry Yorgi covered. So I got, you know, fights that I've covered live. I've got some of those preview prediction articles that I've done. You know, and I've done, I can't tell you how many of those, you know, at least 15, 20 of those. And I'm usually right on the money. And then I have a few of the Fantasy Dream fights, which I don't do anymore. Like, I really did enjoy doing them. But the one thing I missed about it was, I put an article together, okay, Manny Pacquiao is going to fight, you know, Miguel Cotto. What is my prediction on the fight? And then I would write up my prediction. And then I would get to see it unfold, and I really enjoy that. You know, or we'd have, you know, Floyd Mayweather fighting Shane Mosley or whoever. I really enjoyed seeing how my predictions turned out. In Fantasy Dream Fights, unless you, you know, play Fight Night 4, you're never going to see Mike Tyson fight Muhammad Ali. It's a fact of the matter. So it wasn't as exciting for me because I would never get to see that fight realized in person or, you know, realized in real life. But I got, you know, and then I got some other articles that I wrote, you know, more like editorials, like, you know, favorite fighters to watch. I did that when I first started. That was one of my very first ones. Least favorite fighters to watch. Hector Camacho, you know, just, you know, stuff like that. And then the Coup de Grace one that I would add in there was my tribute to Arturo Gatti.
Right. Yeah, see what they say, but I don't know. I think they're just wicked stingy about everything. You got to be like a Pulitzer Prize winner writer to get in nowadays.
Maybe I am.
Maybe you are. But we'll see. You know, we'll have more to gripe about next week if we get the same results.
Yeah.
But at least you stuck with it. You know, I kind of moved away from it, so maybe that's why.
What I think more than anything would hurt my chances, to be honest, would be the fact that I don't do as much on the writing side anymore as I used to. When I first started this with you back in 2007, and even into 2008, I was doing a lot of writing because of the fact that, you know, I was going to more fights. There was more local fight cards. Now that the Blue Horizon's not operational, there is not as many. Now that Peltz is doing a lot more of his stuff in Atlantic City, I haven't been down to the Joey I, you know, fight card yet. He's doing that like every other month. But the first month he did it, I was busy that weekend, and this coming month I'm going to be in Florida. So, I mean, that makes it a little bit difficult, but there's not as many live fights to cover. And then the other thing is, like, at my job now, It's like I am nonstop from the moment I walk in to the moment I leave. In my last place, I'd have a stretch for about an hour, to an hour and a half. I'd have nothing to do. Our job was drying up, so I would sit there like, you know, what can I do? Hey, what was my top five favorite fights of all time? And let me recap them and write an editorial on why they were my five favorite fights. Write it up, and there's an article.
I remember the first one I did
was I was writing a practice article just to see, you know, just to be like, hey, I see you're a journalist. You want to write on my side? Yeah, sure. I'm like, well, let me do a practice article just to, you know, see how I do. So I wrote this practice article at 17. Next thing I know, it's posted. I'm like, oh, shit. I didn't even know it was going to be posted.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe that will work for you, but... I'm sure they're going to figure out that you're associated with me at some point. Maybe that will work against you. I was a little bit harsh when I was, like, you know, trying to explain to them. I didn't understand that, you know, this organization that our last guest last week talked so great about, you know, wouldn't even consider a person like me who's, you know, done so much with the website and the fight news stuff. I mean, the radio show interviews and, you know, a couple of the articles that I've written and interviews, like Jackie Callen and what's the other one? The Great White Hope, Travis Kaufman. That actually links to his BoxRec page and his Wikipedia page. So, I mean, you know, these guys, they appreciate some of the stuff that I've written about them so much that they link it to their own stuff. But anyway, I don't know what their problem is. I guess they're just they're trying to get a bunch of super writers together. That just blows my mind. But we've had a couple of our good friends that were accepted as auxiliary members. The guy from Brick City Boxing that I took to his first UFC fight, Danny Ceritelli, and another guy we had on way back when. Years ago, was Ryan Sangalia, who's done a lot of work.
Yeah, I remember Ryan. I love talking to him.
But I'll forward you all that stuff later, and I'd definitely like to see how it goes with you. Maybe I actually soften them up a little bit. Maybe I straighten them out on the journalist thing. But if you look at the definition of journalist, it sort of has a little bit of a negative or a flat connotation. It's actually separated from what they call scholarly writing, which would be like a book or you know, something on history. But basically, even on Wikipedia, it defines journalism as the practice of investigation and reporting of events, issues, and trends to a broad audience. The idea is basically to inform the citizenry. But journalism isn't like, you know, super research oriented. It's basically media as a business, is what it is. And it's traditionally used when you're talking about newspaper writers and TV reporters that do the news. It's just the facts, man, type of stuff. But you know, it also includes photojournalism and documentary work, and it even says it includes editing. But they said that, you know, the Boxing Writers Association is just for writers, so they mentioned that all that other stuff doesn't mean anything, even though they did say that my experience as an actual boxer for VMI and some of the stuff that I've done with Battle of the Badges and stuff was laudable, and that they, you know, it was unfortunate that they couldn't accept me because of all that. It's like, all right, so you're trying to say that doesn't mean anything, but it does mean something. But journalism is not necessarily a compliment. It's just sort of a flat label. And it's being kicked around by them like it's something it's not. So I think, you know, as great a writer as Thomas Hauser is, he needs to start reading the dictionary a little better. Well, that's all I got to say about that one. We'll let him digest your application, and we'll talk about how far you've been.
I think I can do it. not anything uncontroversial enough.
Right. And one of the questions was, you know, how many fights have you attended personally and reported on? And, you know, that's one thing that they do a lot of. They supposedly, according to our guest last week, they help young up-and-coming writers get better treatment at fight events. So it's like a union in that respect. But I've only gone to, like, from maybe 5 or 6 fight cards over the years, unfortunately. For boxing, I've actually gone to way more MMA events than boxing.
Wouldn't you do that?
And that's why I wanted to join the Boxing Writers Association. If I'm going to be hanging out here in Vegas and going to these fights, you know, it would be a good deal. But they don't want me, so forget about it. Donnie Brasco would say. As far as the upcoming fights this weekend, I'm just kind of wading through the list. This is a pretty interesting one. From the Seminole Hard Rock and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. That's where they're having Friday Night Fights this weekend. We have Brad Solomon, 16-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Demetrius Hopkins. 30.
Yeah, I see that. B-Hop's nephew.
Yep. He's 30-1, 1 draw, 1 loss, and but no knockouts, losses. He's got 11 knockouts, wins. Solomon has 7. It's for the WBA International Welterweight title. And also pretty interesting. We got some heavyweight action for a title. The NABA heavyweight title is on the line between Cedric Boswell, 33-1, 26 knockouts, and Oliver McCall, 37 knockouts.
My God, I thought his career was totally trashed after that time. He had a mental breakdown in the fight with Lennox Lewis.
Yeah.
That was, what, about 15, 16 years ago at least?
I always thought since then, but not much. Not very big opponents either. Well, big is in heavyweight, but not big. big name opponents. Let's see what else we got. We got a Jesus Fight of the Week in Phoenix, Arizona tomorrow for the vacant IBF North American Super Middleweight title. We have Jesus Gonzalez, who's 25-1. 14 knockouts, fighting Dafir Smith, 24-19 with 4 knockouts.
I don't know him well, but I know Dafir Smith, Dafir No Fear Smith, as they call him. I mean, he had a very impressive win in one of his last fights against Jeff Lacy. He practically kicked the crap out of Lacy, who was, you know, a former world champion and a highly ranked fighter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll see how he does that.
Yeah, Dafir Smith is a fighter a lot better than his record, to be totally honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw that with Tucker's opponent there, Larry Pryor, so who knows what could happen. And actually, just kind of checking out Oliver McCall's record here just for shits and giggles. And his last opponent was in December of last year, Fres Oquendo, who was like Holyfield's first guy back from the mothballs. 32-6, Fres Oquendo was, and then McCall beat him in that fight. Before that, he lost to Timur Ibragimov in June 2010. Hasn't been fighting really all that much, just enough to get by, I guess. But the big fight this weekend, I think, is up in Montreal, where my good buddy Richard Bergeron is the major politician up in Montreal. He's an old guy, Richard Bergeron. But whenever I set up my Google alerts for Rich Bergeron, I always get his articles in there because they're always complaining about something that he's doing. And he ran for mayor and lost a few years ago. So, he was in that. But anyway, we have Brian McGee, 34-3 with 24 knockouts, one draw, fighting Lucien Bute at super middleweight, who's 27-0 with 22 knockouts. And they're talking about the winner of this fighting the winner of the Super 6 tournament. So that should be interesting. It's going to be on Showtime. Also on the card, we have VRL Simeon at super featherweight, 12-0 with 5 knockouts, fighting Pedro Navarrete, 25-10 with 15 knockouts, 3 draws. And Vaines Matarossian at light middleweight, 28-0 with 17 knockouts, fighting Vladimir. I've never heard of a Vladimir. Vladimir Hernandez, 18-4 with 16 knockouts. Pretty interesting. All around. Pierre Oliver Cote at light welterweight is 14-0, 9 knockouts, fighting Michael Lozada, who's 37-7 with 1 draw and 30 knockouts. Pretty good percentage there at light welterweight. Then we have Sebastian Gauthier at bantamweight, 19-2 with 12 knockouts, fighting Giovanni Soto, who's 31-9 with 26 knockouts. Pretty good card there all around up in Canada. And here we are with the mismatch of the week from Germany on Saturday. How is this for a mismatch? We got Turgay Uzun, 34-15 with 21 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Chokey Harnasi, who's 0-5.
What?
It's a rough day.
Oh, maybe we'll get him then.
Quite the upset. And as you said earlier, that Vitaly Klitschko fight is this weekend in Germany as well. Cologne, Germany. And we have Vitaly, who's 41-2 with 38 knockouts, fighting Oblanier Solis, who's 17-0 with 12 knockouts for the WBC heavyweight title. Then we have Ola Afalabi, a cruiserweight, who's 15-2, 6 knockouts, 3 draws, fighting Lubos Suda, who's 23-4 with 1 draw, 15 knockouts. Card. And another interesting heavyweight 8-rounder between Nori Safiri, 29-6 with 18 knockouts, and Joseph Nagy, who's 24-9 with 15 knockouts. Well, interestingly enough, there's a 4-rounder between Michael Sprott, who's 35-15 with 17 knockouts, and Serdar Saul, who is 13-12, 2 draws, 6 knockouts. Michael Sprott in a 4-rounder. That's kind of weird. Over there in Germany, I guess they do what they want. He's been around, for sure. His last fight was a 3-rounder. He fights a lot of 3-rounders now, I guess. His last 10-rounder was in 2009. And, he's fought in Germany and the United Kingdom since then. A bunch of 3-rounders and a 4-rounder in Germany. Matt Skelton was one of the 3-rounders he fought back in October of last year. Won by split decision. Oh, that must be the prize fighter fights then. That's what it is. Yeah. Prize fighter. They're all on the same night. He lost to Ugly Harrison. That's what it is. So he's so used to the prize fighter tournament format that he's sticking to it. But in a different country now. Right, let's see what else we got. One of the purported, I guess you could say, but sounds pretty legit to me, the guy who has one of the best records in the history of amateur boxing, Guillermo Arrigondo, who's 7-0 as a pro, is fighting this weekend in Dublin, Ireland on Saturday, fighting Willie Casey, who's 11-0 with 7 knockouts for the interim WBA super bantamweight title. This is very rare where you see a guy with such a low amount of professional fights. Number one, fighting a 12-rounder main event, and number two, fighting for a title. But I guess Rigondeaux's amateur record speaks volumes. I don't know much about Willie Casey, but he's got 7 knockouts, so he must be also dangerous. Two guys with no losses being matched up against each other early on in their careers. That's always interesting. And he's fought pretty much all over in his area, except for one fight in Ontario, Canada, Casey has. So, I don't know. I don't give him much of a chance against Rigondeaux. He's pretty tough. But also on that card, we have Anthony Fitzgerald, 11-2 with 4 knockouts, fighting Afif Belgicham, 19-6 with 1 draw, 4 knockouts. And that's definitely going to be a good fight, I think. Down in Mexico, we have an interesting light middleweight matchup between David Lopez, 39-12 with 23 knockouts, and Michael Rosales, 30-3 with 25 knockouts. That's for the vacant NABA light middleweight title. And we also have a female championship fight on the card between Areli Muschino, 11-0 with 7 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Carolina Alvarez, 11-3 with 1 draw, 5 knockouts. And it's for the IBF female flyweight title. And finally, we have super bantamweight Sergio Torres, 15-2 with 14 knockouts, fighting Marlon Aguilar, who's 25-9 with 18 knockouts and 1 draw. And we go to Puebla, Mexico, where Bob Arum is putting on a fight between Roman Gonzalez, 27-0 with 23 knockouts, and Manuel Vargas, who's 29-7 with 14 knockouts with 1 draw, and that's the only fight listed on the card. It's the one and only. Much else is jumping out at me here.
And then I'd tell them to shut the fuck up. You know, I'd rather not have to slap anybody around when I'm on vacation.
Right.
Yeah, that's not what I'm looking to do.
That's about it for the boxing upcoming anyway for this weekend. Though, interestingly enough, I just saw a banner for the boxing this weekend for Butte versus McGee on Sherdog, which is a MMA. MMA site, so it's kind of weird. But we have UFC 128, Shogun versus Jones this weekend. And what I didn't realize until last week was that Jones is a guy that I saw come up through the ranks and get to the UFC. In New England, I was actually at some of his earlier fights, and then what happened was the video video of his first fight circulated, and I saw the banner of a fight company that I used to go to all their events. I said, oh, man, I've seen that guy fight before. So I looked up his record, and sure enough, I saw his like fourth or fifth fight over there in Foxwoods. But he's the main event. He's fighting Mauricio Hua, who definitely has the experience factor going into this one, but Nate Jones is he's such a tall, lanky guy with sharp elbows that he's going to have an incredible reach advantage going in. And striking-wise, he's going to have the benefit of the doubt there. But Rua is having had a tough time coming through a new controversial loss to Lyoto Machida, going back and winning by KO from punches in round one. In the next fight, that was back in May of 2010, was his last fight. So he's had a little bit of a layoff. John Bones Jones just fought not too long ago. So I'm betting on Jones in this one. He's the fresher fighter. He's ranked as the number 7 light heavyweight. But even our former guest, Bruce Buffer, mentioned
that. This is awesome.
This guy is it. You know, he's the best up-and-coming guy there is in the UFC. And 3 out of his last 4 fights ended in the first round from strikes. Although one of them was a loss to Matt Hamill from a disqualification. But it's typically elbows and punches is how he's been taking people out lately. That's how he took out Vladimir Matyushenko and Brandon Vera in 2010. Those were his two fights in 2010. And then he had a win over Ryan Bader back in February of 2011 here, not too long ago. So that was in the second round, right at the beginning of the second round. And obviously he didn't really have much of any injuries to come back from after that fight or wear and tear, because he's right back in the mix here in March. So that's going to be an excellent fight I'm looking forward to. And it's part of a real all-star card. We have Uriah Faber versus Eddie Wineland, both guys from the WEC there. Joseph Benavidez fighting Ian Loveland. Mirko Filipovic versus Brendan Schaub. And a lot of people are wondering what this fight proves, I guess, for Krokop. It's, you know, do or die. I think he'll be thrown out if he loses this fight. And Brendan Schaub is a real tough guy from the Ultimate Fighter show. And he's done pretty well since going into the UFC. He's 7-1 overall, but just got into the UFC after the Ultimate Fighter. And he put Gabriel Gonzaga out of the business in his last fight. Beat Gabriel Gonzaga, and they threw Gabriel right out of the UFC. He fought Chris Juschere back in July of 2010, beat him by punches very early in the fight in the first round, and he fought Chase Gormley before that, won by punches in the first round, and had a loss to Roy Nelson on the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Hey,
debut. And Roy Nelson's actually coming back on one of the next upcoming UFC cards. We'll have to check that out. Speaking of the devil, 15-5, Roy Nelson. This fight club is the country club. Yeah, a loss to Junior Dos Santos, his last fight out. I'm not sure exactly what where his next fight is going to be, but we'll find that out in a minute. But also on UFC 128, we have our next guest is going to be talking a little bit about this fight, of course, because it's his good friend and training partner there, Kamal Chalrous. We had on the show not too long ago, fighting Jim Miller. It's going to be Kamal's UFC debut. Is that fight? Sorry, I'm yawning over here.
That's okay. I drink a lot of caffeine today, so.
Nate Marquardt is fighting the other Miller on the same card, Dan Miller. Dan Miller and Jim Miller, I think they are actually brothers. Even though Miller is a very common name. Chalrous is 7-0, undefeated. And he's been to the WEC. He's had four WEC fights and some pretty big names, but this will be his UFC debut as far as the big show. Rafael Asenteo fighting Eric Koch. Ricardo Almeida versus Mike Pyle. Kirk Pellegrino versus Jason Thibault. Anthony Nokuani versus Edson Barboza Jr. Constantino Scalopu versus Nick Catone. And finally, Luis Arthur Kane Jr. versus Elliot Marshall. And this is going to be in Newark, New Jersey, of course. Fight. We already saw a lot of UFC and MMA grandstanding this week in New York. Because, of course, New York is struggling with the idea of getting mixed martial arts regulated over there. So, it's been kind of a rocky situation. Not too many people are keen on it. New York, it's like a 50-50 ratio of people that have been profiled as far as polls and stuff like that to see who actually approves of it in the voting public. And it's been 60-40, it's 50-50 now, I think. So they're kind of making a dent, but the legislature is the most important part. I guess they're just not interested, but the big thing, as always, is the buck, the almighty buck. And they're going yet again, since there have been some fights in Newark before, this will be a big one, though, since it's a big championship match, the main event there. We're going to see, I think, a lot of these legislatures start raising eyebrows and start realizing that even when the fight's in New York, in New Jersey, they get some residual benefit, but if the fight was in New York, they'd have way more. And when I went down there for the only UFC fight I've ever been to back in October of 2007, I stayed at a hotel in New York City and took the tunnel into New Jersey and went to the fights. Pretty decent venue out there in New York. It's not that far from the city. So I'm sure a lot of people are going to be doing that. But there's no place like New York City for a fight, other than Vegas maybe. But even Vegas, it's a very small town, Vegas. People think it's a huge city, but it's really very small compared to most mainstream cities. New York City is the biggest city in the world, really. So, one of the biggest cities. Oh, if it's the biggest city in the world, it's close enough. Millions of people in there. So, hopefully, the state in general gets the message and decides to legitimize MMA for once, because I think it's about due for it. But as far as other MMA fights go this weekend, we have King of the Cage Brawl in the Mall, Edmonton, Alberta, UCC 7 Unfinished Business from Yorkshire, England, Universal Cage Combat from Four Seasons Entertainment Hall in Washington, Indiana. These are all on the 18th. That's tomorrow, right? Tomorrow. Breakpoint RFC 23 from Tampa, Florida. And then we go to Saturday's fights. KSW 15 from Poland. United Glory World Series second round from Wallonia, Belgium. VFC 2, number 2 from Karlstad, Sweden. Throwdown Nitro 2 from Queensland, Australia. Rage in the Cage 150 in Chandler, Arizona. Allegiance 2 in New South Wales, Australia. WFC Praetorian from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. PFC 7 Cold Lake from Cold Lake, Alberta. Bellator Fighting Championships 37 from Concho, Oklahoma. Arena Combat 3 from Araquém, Rondônia, Brazil. And KOMMA Honor from Berkshire, England. And a few more here. Battle in the Bay 5 from Colwyn Bay, Wales. Unleashed LFC from Hertfordshire, England. And finally, we have Lucky 7 on Saturday from Zanesville, Ohio, in the United States here. Ohio Fight Conference. And, of course, we have the Japanese coming out with something that looks like on Monday. So we're on Monday. Shudo is having an event, Gig South, in Kitakuyushi, Fukuoka, Japan. And one thing that's been coming out lately in the news, the MMA news anyway, is that it seems like all the issues with the earthquake and tsunami damage over there in Japan is causing a lot of shakeup in the MMA industry over there. No pun intended. But apparently, a lot of these organizations like Shuto, they're losing sponsors, having financial difficulties, and this whole situation with the earthquake and displacing all these people and causing mass pandemonium in all these places, and just ultimate havoc, really. It's just making it very hard to put on big events in these big cities near the areas that were hardest hit. And the UFC buying Strikeforce around this time, it was just like, you know, kind of accidental timing, obviously, but, you know, it could just basically level the whole industry of MMA in Japan. It's going to take a while for them to recover from all this and obviously get their fight leagues together and start doing more events, but, you know, we have the whole Sengoku, Dream, all those organizations. They were struggling already before all this happened. So, yeah, you add this situation to it, and it's just making it worse for them to be able to compete in the mass marketplace and to keep going as ongoing organizations. So, hopefully they work out their stuff and, Japan obviously is on a lot of people's minds. It's a lot of devastation there with these nuclear reactors going off. Ironically enough, a lot of those reactors over there were built by U.S. companies. So, actually, there was a post by Ice John Scully the other day on Facebook where I had to jump on there and educate some people because he had made a comment like, you know, where does all this money come from that we're just giving to these countries when they have disasters? And, you know, why should we be giving them any money anyway? We got to take care of our own. And so there was like 200 comments on it by the time that I got on there. And,
I hate commenting on anyone who posts. Because this usually like 30 emails, like, someone's going to comment. And guess what? They're commenting on whatever you commented on. They're commenting on his post. Like, oh, shit, you know, again. I got a couple friends like that. Like, you know, they do get a lot of, activity on their site. And, you know, once you write anything on there, any of the comments, these people are, you know, firing up on there. Well, and this is, I mean, obviously completely off the topic of, you know, Japan. It's just the world in general. One thing that upsets me a little bit, and like I said, this is, you know, nothing towards the Japanese people, because I am, you know, for helping them out, and, you know, this is a horrible tragedy, and, you know, it's tough to watch anybody suffer like that. But you look when you have, you know, people in America, it's like, oh, my God, there was a tragedy over and wherever. There was some of this. We have to do this. We have to donate this. We have to donate that. But then, and it's a lot of these big celebrities, you know, when I forget what happened, but it was like, you know, they were doing this, doing that. But then, like, you know, 9/11 happened and Hurricane Katrina happened. Where were a lot of the big celebrities then? Some of them stepped up and helped. A lot of them were like, well, you know, and they felt they didn't need to. Well, you know what, if you have something that you can, you know, give to help out, especially help out your own country, you know, don't, you know, short-shift the people in your own country, you know, just because it's not somewhere else. And you feel that, you know, the government should help them out. No, and help out people in your own country first. And when there was a time of a tragedy like this, it was, I remember the one was when they had that tsunami over in, not India, but I forget if it was Malaria or the Philippines a few years ago. A lot of people the big tsunami a couple of years ago, and it was like, oh, this horrible tragedy. It was like a year later, Katrina happened, and the same people that were like donating $1 million didn't want to donate $5.
Yep. Definitely happens that way. But my point was, a lot of those situations like this, well, not obviously natural disaster, you can't really blame anybody for that. But my point to John was, you know, the reactors, at least, the issues with those, you could potentially put on the, you know, the capitalist attitude of the United States in general, and the idea that, you know, you build something for the cheapest possible price, and you don't build it up to standard because you're trying to cut corners, you know, and that was the way those places were built over there, and they should have had backup diesel generators instead of backup generators that are, you know, powered by electricity. That was the big deal why they started exploding over there. It was because of electrical problems. But that's a whole other debate that's better left on Facebook. We're going to get John Shattuck on the phone right now and talk about his boy from Marshall Roof.
Martial arts.
Hey, John, this is Rebel Ralph and Rich. How's it going?
All right. Can you give me a minute?
Sure.
Great. Thank you. All right.
All right. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line here. He's our boxing expert.
Okay.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going?
Oh, doing all right.
So, John, tell us a little bit about the gym there and what you got going on.
Okay. Well, we're in Eldersburg, Maryland, and the big thing about us, we're starting up a new martial art. Kamal Shelarus is actually fighting on Saturday in the UFC, and it's his style of martial arts. It's SICS. It stands for Shelarus Integrated Combat Systems, and it combines boxing, wrestling, catch wrestling, Russian sambo, Muay Thai, and it's just a great all-around martial arts, you know, similar to like a Jeet Kune Do. And I'm the consultant for the striking part of it because I'm helping them out with the boxing and stuff.
Cool. And how did you get all your fighting experience?
I'm sorry?
How did you get all your fighting experience? How did you get into fighting?
Well, I started wrestling at age 3. I wrestled for 12 years, and then I got into Golden Gloves boxing. I boxed competitively for 8 years. I was a New England Diamond Belt boxing champion. I was a 2-time finalist in the Vermont State Golden Gloves. I fought in tough man contests. I tried out for contender at age 37, and I fought down in D.C., and I fought down in Philly. And then I recently have done some jiu-jitsu tournaments. I won the Battle of Baltimore tournament, and I won the Maryland Open. So.
Cool. Our co-host here is from Philly.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, when you did that contender tryout in Philly, you probably were there with a bunch of my old training partners. I knew a couple of guys that went down to there, you know, when they were doing that first year. Like I said, you were probably down there with all old training.
It was the first year of that Johan's gym. So.
I remember that. I remember when they did that. It was June that the audition was, and I knew a couple guys that went down to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was pretty cool. It was actually Cooper Gooding Jr. was there sparring with his I guess his cousin or nephew was trying out for the tender at that time. And they weren't looking for heavyweights, which I found out after the fact. So.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when they were talking about it, because I hadn't fought in a couple years before that, but I had a couple friends and coworkers remind me, like, oh, you got to go down and try it. You got to go down and try out. I said, yeah, but I said, I read somewhere that they're looking to do the first season as a middleweight. I said, the lowest I ever fought at was at 165. That was back in, like, the late 90s. And I said, I had to kill myself to make it. And that was for only one fight. I said,
right.
If I had killed myself to get to 165 back in 97, I said, I'm afraid to see what trying to get back to 165 would do to me now. And, and I said, I never got lower than 65. They're like, yeah, but you should go to Sly Stallone and all that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm a big Rocky fan, always have been. And, you know, I was like, and then the weekend it was going to happen, I had hurt my hand pretty bad training a couple days before that. I couldn't even clench a fist. So I said, you know, if they're not looking for guys over 175 pounds. At the time, I was about 210. And I was like, right. I said, it's not going to be worth it. I can't even, you know, make a fist.
All right. Cool.
So,
I wanted to ask you about your Golden Gloves out of New England. Any guys that you fought with back in the day, like any of them become named fighters that, you know, are in the pros now? I mean, because like, I know.
I fought back in the 80s, way back in the day. But Joey Camacho was my weight class 1 year, and he won the world title at lightweight.
Sure. We were talking about Joey last week and about his controversial fight with Arturo Gatti.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in my weight. I was actually glad I didn't have to get to fight him. The guy that beat me got destroyed by him in the finals, but that was when I first started out. So, but he was a beast. He was alternate Olympic team at that time, and well, when I fought in Vermont, it was kind of like a way station. You had a lot of states that would fight through there. So we had, you know, Joe was from Maine, so their guys would come in like 40, 50 fights. You'd have, you know, Vermont fighters in the finals with like seven to 10 fights, and they're fighting these guys from, we had guys from New York and guys from Canada fighting in our Golden Gloves. So you'd have guys come in with like 40, 50 fights, and this is an easy route to get to the Nationals. You would go in, fight there, and you get to go fight in the New England. And then you go on up to the national. So.
Cool. And what made you make the switch from boxing to the mixed martial arts?
Well, I got out of wrestling, got into boxing, and then we've been doing a lot of boxing fitness for years. I've been in the health club business for a number of years and was doing that and was looking for something different to do, and I came upon a person that had a jiu-jitsu studio, and he told me if I trained his guy to box, he'd teach me jiu-jitsu for free. So I was like, yeah, that was a pretty good deal. And went about, eventually he was telling me he was going to leave, and I was kind of bummed out. He says, well, do you want to take the place over? So I'm like, oh, okay. And then, my roots are wrestling, so that was kind of a natural transition. And then I came upon meeting Kamal. He came up, did a seminar, and started talking to me about doing this thing. He was in the process of creating it, and now I've come as part of the creation process. A lot of fun teaching the striking and stuff, and I love what he's doing, and I think it's going to be neat, to meet martial arts, but wrestling was in my roots, and you started thinking about doing wrestling again, and now the submissions and the boxing all kind of make sense. And I've gotten kind of bored with boxing, with the politics and stuff. I really kind of, I like the Ultimate Fighter and the MMA because, it's a lot faster sport. I think it's not as boring.
Yeah, unfortunately, as a boxer myself from back in the day in college, I kind of lost touch with the sport. I don't watch it as much anymore. And once you do start watching MMA, it's like a whole new ball game, literally. And, I still watch boxing from time to time, but if there's a MMA fight, I'd much rather be watching that.
The cards are much better, You're going to watch, you're going to get at least three or four good fights out of a UFC or Strikeforce fight, whereas opposed to you go and you watch, a boxing match, you're going to have maybe the main event may be good and the rest of the fights usually suck.
Yeah, I do notice that. And the best guys aren't fighting the best guys anymore in a lot of weight classes. Nowadays, it seems like in boxing, the best weight classes are the lighter ones. Like welterweight is the big focus now rather than the heavyweight division because of these Russians that have taken over. But as far as Kamal goes, tell us a little bit about him and he's got a big fight coming in Saturday, right?
Yeah, Kamal was basically an Olympic wrestler. He's from Iran originally. His brother's actually the coach of the Iranian wrestling team, which, if you know, those guys have the best wrestlers. He wrestled for the UK Olympic team. And then throughout that, he got into MMA, and he's been tearing up ever since. He's undefeated. He's fighting Jim Miller, who's a real tough fighter. This is his first fight in the UFC. He was in the WEC. And he drew with Jamie Varner. He's beaten a lot of really top-notch guys. And he's on his route, man. He's a tough bastard. He's strong as hell. And I think this right now is his big fight. And if he wins this, it's going to really take him a long way. And he could bring up some tension.
Right. One thing I've noticed from a lot of the recent UFC cards, and just MMA in general, and this is your specialty, it seems to me that it's gone towards striking more than any other aspect of the fight game. Like, especially with these bonuses given out for guys for knockout of the night and that sort of thing. And also because they're throwing people out left and right for not putting on a show. Have you noticed that it's just been going on more on the
floor? Well, he's Kamal, unfortunately, he's a phenomenal wrestler, and he does a lot of striking just because it's crowd-pleasing. I'm trying to kind of convince him to do the otherwise because his striking is not his forte. He can kick real hard, but his boxing could be better. And but as a grappler, he's awesome. But I think he gets caught. You get caught up in it because the crowd wants to see, a slugfest in there. And notice just from, and I'm trying to really work with my guys. Unfortunately, the only thing unfortunate about the mixed martial arts is you got so many things you got to work on during the week that. You can't spend 100% of your time doing the boxing or 100% of your time wrestling or either one. You got to kind of work on each one every week. Like we do a different, different thing every day. And, what happens is your guys are, they're not going to be 100%. Nobody's going to be a phenomenal boxer, phenomenal kicker. I mean, you're going to be a little bit better at striking than grappling, but it's tough to really get him that way. But the UFC, you know, the MMA guys, I take my brother to the amateur events. He was a Golden Gloves champ, and he said, man, these guys' boxing is horrible. And I'm like, yeah, no. You know, the box is even on the pro level, there's a few guys, you know, GSP, because he works with Freddie Roach and a couple of guys like that, but for the most part, the guys that are boxing is lousy. So that's what we're trying to pick that up as well.
Yeah, there's only a few guys that I've seen that they were just really unstoppable with their boxing. Frankie Hitler's pretty good, I think. He's developed quite a good boxing game. I just noticed that it seems like these guys, like you said, are thinking about pleasing the crowd more than being strategic and embracing their greatest strengths.
I was telling I've said it a few times on the air, and I've talked to Rich about this more in the past. A couple of years ago, there was a mixed martial arts gym not far from where I live outside of Philadelphia, and I happened to meet the guy who owns it at another gym we were talking, and he was like, listen, he goes, my gym, he goes, you know, we do great with the jiu-jitsu, that's our specialty. He goes, but we need somebody that can really teach us the art of boxing and how to, you know, fight standing up, you know, just something else added to the game. Now, I've never done any type of martial arts. I am strictly a boxer. And I admit to people, like, I've never wrestled. My high school didn't have a wrestling program. My college had a very top-ranked wrestling program in the country. I don't know how familiar you are with Lock Haven University. I had some very good friends on the wrestling team, but I was always on the boxing team. I am a very traditional boxer. So when the offer was made to me about, you know, possibly training there and training some of the guys how to box, I was like, you know what, yeah, I'll come over and I'll meet with you. And unfortunately, the night that I went, the gentleman, the trainer, he was not available. He was running a class. So I watched some of his class and watched him, you know, showing the guys, you know, some jiu-jitsu and some training and all that. And his wife came in. She was the manager of the gym, you know, and she started talking to me, and she actually really offended me. And the first thing she said to me, she goes, okay, you're going to come possibly train some of our guys boxing. Yes. And we're going to have you work with some of our younger kids, too. Yes, I am. You know, you younger kids, you know, that are trying to get in shape and learn different stuff. Yeah, I'm going to work with them. Well, do you waste time when you're on, or, you know, the first thing was, do you invoke discipline in your classes? And I'm thinking martial arts, which, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Karate Kid, you know, yes, sir, and all that. And I'm like, well, I said, you don't have to call me sir. You can call me Tony. That's fine. But when I train, he said, you got to understand something. I am the boss, and if I tell you to do something, you got to listen to me and respect what I'm saying. Well, we don't want that in our classes. We want these kids to come in and have fun and not be, you know, offended. And I said, but that's not realistic, you know. These kids come in, and I don't beat anybody. I don't torture anybody. I don't hit anybody. But if I tell you to do something, you will do it because I'm the boss. And then she was, and do you waste time on technique when you're training boxing? I said, well, boxing is a lot of technique, you know, keeping your hands right, throwing the punches. She's like, no, it's not. Boxing's just punching people. And we just want the kids to get in and hit a bag and just get a good workout in and bring up a sweat. I said, then you don't need me. I said, you can bring a trained chimp in here and say, hit a bag for 3 rounds. I said, well, what are you going to pay me for? You know, and that actually very much offended me because I'm a very old school guy. I came from an old South Philly gym with a lot of the old time trainers that looked kind of like Mickey from Rocky, and they tied a rope between my feet and everything. So I'm right. Very old school, and that actually offended me a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people don't realize that. I teach a lot. I mean, a big part of my membership is the boxing fitness classes, but, you know, I do a lot of footwork, and I teach just like a boxing class, just no contact. They hit the mitts and everything, and a lot of people don't realize how much footwork and how much technique and how much thinking is involved in it.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell people, it's like, even when I train people now just for fun, and a friend of mine that I grew up with, you know, we're both in our 30s now, and we grew up together, and, you know, he knew me, you know, when I was fighting in the amateurs and all. And then he came over a few times, you know, I have a gym in my basement. I was like, let me, you know, work you on the mitts and show you different things. And then I got to take him to his first live fight. It was an Arturo Gatti fight back in 06 when he lost to Carlos Baldemare. And then I got to take him to a local fight card. And he was watching the stuff, and he goes, now I understand some of the things that you taught me. He's like, you know, when we were doing them, he goes, I really didn't get it. He goes, but now that I watch a fight, unlike years ago when we used to watch them together growing up, he's like, now I understand it. He goes, I can see the little things that you teach people. And it's like, and he's like, and it helps them enjoy the fight that much more.
Right.
But yeah, I said, the rope between the feet, I said, that's a real technique. I said, that's no bullshit. And they're like, well, how do you know it's real? I said, because back in, you know, 2001, after fighting for 5 years and being right-handed and having no right hand, being strictly a left hook puncher, they figured out that my stance was too wide and they tied a rope between my feet.
All right. Yeah, we used to be able to bungee. We still do it. From the bungee with the, get the two things you wrap around the ankles and have the guy work with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of technique, and it is, it's funny you mentioned the footwork. It's one of those things that I used to always try to teach my kids when I boxed up at Norwich, and I ran the boxing club up there, speaking of Vermont, up in Northfield, Vermont. I don't know if you're familiar with that area. But
that was in Rutland, so.
Oh, yeah, it's a little bit of ways away. But when I coached up there, I grew up watching Mike Tyson, of course, so I would always try to teach people the Mike Tyson left hook. And I'd explain right off the bat that, you know, a lot of people think all the power is in the upper body, in the chest or the biceps. But really, it's especially with that punch, it comes from the calves. You know, the turning of the feet and the pushing off from that calf muscle. And if you notice, when Mike Tyson was in his prime, he had gigantic calves. So that's where a lot of the power from his punches came from. And a lot of people remember the uppercut of his, but he also had a real devastating left hook. So becoming more of a hook puncher than anything, just from watching him. And that's one of the things that people complain about most, I think, when they talk about boxing these days, is there's no Mike Tyson figure out there. Talk about how soft Mike's getting. I just heard that he took his daughter to a Justin Bieber movie, and now he's talking about how Justin Bieber is.
That is kind of funny, actually. Can you see, like, Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, as he was known? Boy, that Justin Bieber, I mean, he's just a phenomenal artist these days.
I actually did see, though, he had the new fight night game has a bunch of segments where they talk to fighters about, you know, the realness of the game and everything. And there's a segment where Tyson's talking about prison, being in prison. And he was like a couple cells over from this guy who got killed over a bottle of Coke and a bag of chips in prison at Stats. So, you know, he was just kind of going through the nitty-gritty there. But he's so far out of the game, they got him doing a pigeon show now. Raising pigeons. Up and down the New York area. But what do you enjoy most about doing the training out there, John?
Well, it's kind of neat. Kind of get these guys out of nowhere and just kind of take them to a new level. I got one kid that's 2-0, Kyle, that's basically a street fighter, came in, and he's really picking his technique up. Another kid, Billy, that had done a little bit of wrestling, but, you know, never really done anything else, and he's 1-1, we should be 2-0. He's killing the kid, and he got caught in the triangle. I got my heavyweights fighting in a couple weeks in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And he's 1-0. We're supposed to be on Fox TV, so he knocked his guy out the last time, so hopefully we can do it again. He's probably one of my better boxers on the team. And then we got a bunch of young guys up and coming. In fact, I'm starting to recruit a lot of the wrestlers around here, a couple Division III wrestlers coming in, trying to practice out. They loved it. So it's kind of neat just being around the sport. And I'm you know, going to be 43, so I'm done, you know, doing any type of competition, but I'm kind of living vicariously through these guys. So it's a lot of fun.
You know, what's the competition like in that area? Is it legalized in Maryland? Do they have actual fights?
Oh yeah, yeah. We've got the professionals legalized. The amateurs supposedly getting legalized this summer. So, we've got to if you know with Lloyd Irvin, we've gone up there and trained with those guys a little bit. That's where Brandon Vera, his trainer. And he's got a couple of guys. He had a kid that was in the WEC, and he's got one or two guys in the UFC. So he's right on the border of D.C., so he's got a really good camp. There's another school, a couple other schools out here that have some pretty solid guys. We get a kid, Pinky Jones, that's fought on Strike Force before. And so we try and go to different camps. We're new. We're going on a fourth year. I figure, just keep going to these other camps, you're going to pick up stuff, and eventually, we're going to be a powerhouse. I think, next couple of years, I think we're going to turn stuff around, especially with this new style. And, Kamal's going to come down once or twice a year. I'm supposed to go out and train with him in Texas in May, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, we're looking open. Maryland's going to start, people are going to start looking our way. We've done pretty well our last couple. We went down to Virginia, and we just went to Philly. So we were when we first started out, we were kind of just figuring things out, just getting some newer guys that weren't really up to par for fighting. And we were 3-6, and since we started doing the SICS, we're now 5-2, and hoping to win a couple more fights. So done a big turnaround.
So you primarily just train guys in MMA now, or do you do boxing as well still?
I've had a couple guys come in and say they want to box, but my time is so limited. I don't have like a boxing class every day. I had one kid that had trained for one fight and I knew he wasn't ready. His was mental. The kid physically could do everything, but he would gas out. And it was all upstairs, he was training right, he was in shape. He was getting in the ring and he was burnt out, and first round he was done. So, there's not a lot of people. We got a boxing gym. We actually have a pro boxer in my little town that I'm in who fights. So if people are going to box, they just kind of probably go down there. If they want to box for fitness, they come see me. But yeah, the MMA is kind of where I want to go because it's just you try and do too many things. I do everything right now. I coach, I sell memberships, I do it all. So I clean the gym. So it's not a lot of time to do a lot of things. I just kind of focus on one thing.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like me for my website. I do the marketing, I do the web design, I do the writing, I do the radio show. All the stuff.
I don't think I would get bored if, just doing one. Like, the thing about the MMA is, I plan class every day. So, like, one day is wrestling, one day is jiu-jitsu, one day is boxing, one day is Muay Thai. So, it's actually, it doesn't get boring. I think if I did boxing every day, I might get bored with it,
Right. Yeah, it seems too like it's getting so much more important to have these guys coming up, end up with a really well-rounded game, too, and you can't slack on any one area like you were talking about earlier. Especially when you look at these guys that are legends of the sport getting their asses kicked by these new kids coming up who just are way more well-rounded. And, case in point, like guys like Chuck Liddell, and, just people that have been around forever, and you expect them to win. But then some kids you never heard of kicks their ass because they just got everything together. You're not seeing these guys that, like back in the beginning of the UFC, where they just have one certain discipline going against another. And now it's really everything rolled into one.
You can watch Razor Rob fight the other night in Bellator. I don't know if you watched that at all or not. But
I watched that fight, though.
He fought a kid that was supposed to be just a jiu-jitsu guy. Guy'd never fought in the States, and that kid had a hell of some boxing in him. He outboxed the crap out of him the first round, and then he ended up knocking him out, and I think it was the third. So, Razor Rob just basically,
I did see that, actually.
They were saying the kid was a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but he was first round good enough to help box him. I was like, holy shit. And Razor Rob came out in the next couple of rounds, but third round, the kid knocked him out. She goes to show you. I've worked with kids that were strictly jiu-jitsu, and their hands are just horrible. And when I first started, I had a couple of guys that were training at the jiu-jitsu, with the jiu-jitsu guy, and, their hands just really suck. And then they get taken down, the guy's grounding a pound on them. I had one kid that was a purple belt, and the guy takes him down. I'm like, okay, he's fine. He's on the ground. He got the freaking shit kicked out of him. And I pulled him aside. I'm like, what happened, man? He goes, well, I'm not used to getting hit in jiu-jitsu practice. it's part of the game, dude. It's not, the guy doesn't stop punching when he gets to the ground. So.
Right. Yeah, that's always it's always an interesting place to be, trying to punch. The best guys learn to how to punch off their back. That's one of the things that I think is under-taught. How to really land punches and elbows from off your back. But I've seen the guys that do it really confuse their opponents. And I don't know. Somebody told me, I never actually saw it, but one of my friends told me they saw a video online of a guy who knocked somebody out from punching off the back. But I never did find the video myself, but he said he saw it, so I believe him.
That's part of our trainer now. We do... We put a guy on his back, and somebody gets on top, and sometimes it's me, and I just throw bombs at him. I'm like, you got to learn how to block it and how to submit or how to sweep from there, or you're going to get hammered. Because then when it happens in a real fight, you've been there before. If you don't take a guy's where they've never been, they're not going to know what to do. So we try and take them in really shitty situations, like, I put the guy in the middle and just have a bunch of guys coming at him and boxing him, and every minute you get a fresh guy or wrestling the same thing. So when he gets in the match, he's not going to be half as tired as he is getting the crappy out of by a new guy every minute. So.
Right. Yeah, actually, in the last Strike Force fight that I saw, the female fight, Marlowe's Coonan there won the fight. I can't think of the girl she fought right off the bat, but... the girl that she fought was just totally beating the crap out of her in ground and pound, but she was covering so well, and the girl wasn't throwing hard enough punches to knock her out. And she ended up turning the fight around and winning by submission. So, goes to show you, if you weather the storm, you'd be all right. But you see that a lot, it's just technique and heart, really. It's just like boxing. You're gonna have heart to win a lot of these fights. And the Razor Rob fight's a good example too, because I remember that was one of the best fights I've seen in a while for back and forth action, and then it just kind of ended in the middle of nowhere. But Razor was getting really whooped in that first round. Surprising to see him come back from that. But that's what experience gets you. Ability to weather tough situations and work through them. So, having a little bit of wrestling experience myself in college, I always thought maybe, one of these days I'll fool around with MMA and see what it's like, and work around, see what I'm capable of. But then what happened is I saw that guy, Jose Aldo. So I had by Cub Swanson. I don't know if you've seen that one, but it's where the fight was in like 18 seconds. He runs across the ring, does a flying knee, Cub Swanson falls face down on the mat, and throws 6 to 7 punches before the ref comes running in and stops him. I said, anybody that can do that in an MMA fight, I don't want to get involved. The boxing and the wrestling is such a key part of it. Like you said, so few MMA guys have mastered the boxing. It kind of gives you a chance if you have those two disciplines coming in locked down.
Right. I like getting wrestlers because we can teach them how to box and they can take punishment and they're in shape. You know, sometimes boxers just don't like to be on the ground, and martial artists in general, like karate guys, are just, they're not used to getting hit because they're used to doing the point karate bullshit. And, you know, they don't like getting taken to the ground. So, yeah, we're starting to get an influx of wrestlers in here. I know I could teach them how to strike, so.
Yeah, I can remember from wrestling practice, we had the spin drills that they used to hate more than anything. And it just would just destroy you coming out of practice every day. We would, you know, on average, lose about 5 pounds in water weight every single day of practice. We had one of the more well-known teams in Massachusetts out of Quincy, Mass., where I went to high school.
Right.
And we actually were nicknamed the Men at Work Wrestling Team. And just had a guy that was from the Naval Academy that was the coach. He used to put us through hell every day, but, man, it got me in good shape.
Yeah, definitely.
I was able to hack it when I went out to the Air Force Academy for my freshman year out in the thin air because of all that good wrestling training. One thing it does for MMA, I think, is it allows guys to get the experience of the grappling part of it and the muscle fatigue. To be able to deal with that, it's the hardest thing. And I never thought until I actually did it that wrestling was all that tough, you know. I used to take the philosophy of the guy from the Breakfast Club who was making fun of the wrestler. Oh, you guys roll around the ground with other guys in tights. So I used to think of it like that because my friend wrestled, and I used to say that to him all the time. And then he actually recruited me to the team my sophomore year. So then I got in my first tussle with the wrestling, and I said, oh, yeah, it's a lot of work goes into that. I actually had the tough experience of wrestling like 10 pounds above my actual weight. Because my senior year, they didn't have anybody at 171. I was weighing around 155, 160. And I beat the actual captain in a wrestle-off at 160. But they needed to bump me up to 171 for the whole year. So it was rough, you know. But I compiled an 8-2 record just on hard work. And one of my best matches, I ended up going to overtime with the kid. And it was one of those lessons that I learned earlier in the year where the coach told us about these kids that were twins that had just been wrestling all their lives. And they had a technique where, you know, as soon as the action was broken up and they were supposed to come back to the center of the mat, they would literally, like, run. And they'd just show, like, that they would never lose energy. And, so I remember that lesson. The kid that I had gone through the whole three-round periods with was just absolutely exhausted and just breathing heavy and everything like that. But I got right up, and I went right to the line, and I shot for a takedown right off the whistle, and I got it. And I won. I almost got the kid pinned, too. I got the back points, and as soon as the kid got up, it was over. And those things you never forget, you know, going through that experience. There's one time I actually had to make weight for 189. They made me drink 2 gallons of water before I got on the scale. I ended up puking it all up. And then I go out there and they say, oh, just don't get pinned. But I'm going in there against a 3-time state champion. And, of course, 30 seconds later, I'm getting pinned in a pretzel. I don't even know what the heck it was. It was like a backwards triangle choke.
Yeah.
But I used to every now and then get matched up with people like that. It's just those guys are way ahead of their time. They should have been in MMA. I don't know if they boat. I graduated about 95 when MMA really wasn't as popular as it is now. But there were just so many kids that were just phenomenally good and doing things that nobody else was doing that are really MMA moves now. One story I like to tell, so that year I went to sectional tournament, and I got involved in a little MMA before its time myself with the kid that had just head-to-toe muscle. Every muscle was just rippled huge, and he had ended up beating me by decision earlier in the year, and I was like inches from wrapping up a cradle on the kid. And he just held his position, and his muscles were so developed that there was no way I was getting any further with it. So this time I go against him, and he does the move where you're, you know, in the position on the bottom with you're on all fours, and he's on the top, and he right off the whistle chops the arm and follows through and punches me right in the nuts. And then right off the mat, grabbed him by his headgear and kneed him in the face. Which is actually illegal in MMA in most leagues, but man, I was so pissed. And the ref took a point off of both of us because he saw the move that he did. And that was my last sectional match. I ended up placing fifth because it was just so difficult, number one, just to have one match in one day when you're 10 pounds underweight. But trying to have three matches, it's like, forget about it. Anyway. Getting back to you before we leave. Is anybody you want to give a shout out to or say thanks?
I want to root for Kamal. Hopefully we do really well on Saturday. He comes out victorious, and then I'm hoping that people start to notice SICS and what it's all about. We're supposed to get we got a logo on the banner, so look out for the SICS banner on Kamal's logo on Saturday night.
Cool. And where can people find your gym?
They can go to shaddockmma.com. shaddockmma.com. If you go to that, we'll have has everything on it. It has some video. You can watch some of our classes in action. You can see our schedule. You can find out what SICS is all about. And find out about me and my experience and my assistant coaches.
And any predictions for Kamal's fight? What do you, how do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to go the distance. I think it's going to be a really hard fight. But I think Kamal's got really strong wrestling. And I mean, in my experience from having, I mean, I've done jiu-jitsu for a little over 3 years, and I've gotten away with a lot of stuff, gotten by just on my wrestling background. And I think wrestling really does trump jiu-jitsu. If you've got a good, solid wrestling base and you're strong and you can hit hard, I think he's going to win. I think this is going to be a real big step for him. If he wins this fight, Jim Miller's no joke. And Jim Miller's got like 30 MMA fights. So I think if Kamal wins this, it's going to be real well. I think he's going to, he's probably win a decision. Like to see him submit him would be awesome because going against a belt in jiu-jitsu, but it's going to be a great fight.
All right. Well, thanks for dropping by and speaking with us tonight, and we'll keep an eye out for your up-and-coming guys and Kamal, and put up a post about the show there with one of your videos on the website with a link to your site, so. Because there's a bit of a spike in the Maryland area in the next few days. You know.
We're going to be on Fox TV on Saturday, the 26th. My guy Andrew's fighting. So.
Cool. Keep an eye out for that, too.
NPA.
All right, John. Well, awesome having you on again. It's been a while, I know. I interviewed you way back in, like, maybe 2007. First time, I think.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Thanks. And would I? How do I? Can I? Will I be able to listen to the show?
Yeah. Actually, once it's over, I think it takes like about a half an hour to process, and then it'll be available at Fight News Unlimited. I'm actually at the blogtalkradio.com/fightnewsunlimited. It'll be right there in the player. And on the web, right, there's actually a player too on the right hand side of unlimitedfightnews.com. The WordPress blog, it's right on the right hand side. There's a player there too.
All right. Sounds good.
All righty.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right. So that's John Shattuck, ShattuckMMA.com. 90 seconds left, according to the lady. So we've timed that very well. Until next week, I guess that's it for me. We'll be talking about UFC 128. I'll be watching that.
Might be watching in a drunken stupor down in Clearwater, Florida. We don't know yet.
All right. Well, thanks.
We only got about 30 seconds of this tornado, and I am out.
Bye-bye.
Later.